Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 78, Awaken Shadow. I am your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's special co-host, a true Power Pro, former Nintendo Power writer and designer, and also the man responsible for our theme song, Andy Stenobot Myers.
Hey there.
Andy, thanks so much for joining us this week. Scott, my regular co-host, was launched into space last week after reporting erroneous information comparing the Vita to the Switch. So I wish him the best of luck on his interstellar travels. And I'm so happy to have you join me this week because we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Of course, we're still reeling from all the Switch announcements from last week, a lot of which we didn't even get to talk about. So we're going to have a lot of Switch chatter, including this week's big topic, which is what Nintendo can do to make Switch a success. But before we start talking about that, let's kick it off with some news. And specifically, just earlier today, Nintendo unveiled a whole bunch of exciting news about their Fire Emblem franchise. Andy, did you happen to catch that?
I did watch it. It was pretty exciting.
Yeah. What was the thing that excited you the most?
Well, I wasn't super excited going into it, just because all that we had heard was a mobile game and maybe a game from the people who made Hyrule Warriors.
Right. They announced Fire Emblem Warriors last week, so we kind of assumed there would be more about that on this, along with the mobile game. But yeah, there was actually a couple of brand new titles announced.
Yeah, so it was way more interesting than I thought it was going to be, because neither of those things really interested me conceptually. But then the mobile game actually looked kind of interesting. And then, of course, we got the new 3DS game that's sort of a remake of an old Famicom game.
Yeah, it is. It is called Fire Emblem Echoes Shadows of Valentia for Nintendo 3DS. And it is indeed a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden on the Famicom. You know, I came into the Fire Emblem series, you know, somewhat late, and obviously I wasn't, you know, playing Famicom versions of it, so I don't know a whole lot about this title, but it's being completely rebuilt from the ground up, so I think it's really cool that they're giving me and all these other players in North America a chance to discover what this game is all about and discover these characters and discover this part of the mythos that I really haven't had an opportunity to before.
Yeah, for sure. I've been a Fire Emblem super fan for a long time, and that's pretty much the only game I haven't played, so It's kind of exciting to see it getting some new life.
Yeah, totally. So are you familiar with these characters, with Alm and Celica? They're apparently the main characters. And do you know anything about this? Apparently you're exploring dungeons, actual dungeon exploration, and in this case it's in 3D. It was in 2D in the original game, but now it's in 3D. That's pretty crazy and different for a Fire Emblem game.
Yeah, I know very little about this game. Surprisingly, you would think I'd know more about it, but I just don't. And
well, no problem. I think that most players in North America don't, so there's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's must buy for me.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to be getting it as well. And this is totally a game that came out of left field. It's not anything I would have ever guessed they were going to be doing. You know, I never thought we'd be getting another 3DS Fire Emblem game, let alone a remake of one of the classic titles. So that is pretty darn cool. And it's not too far away either. It's coming out on May 19th. And there's even going to be two new amiibo coming out with it, a two-pack of these main characters, Alm and Celica. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I was even more excited about the fact that they're making a new Fire Emblem console game, even though they didn't show anything or give us a title or anything.
Yeah, that was the other big thing. They announced that there is a brand new Fire Emblem game coming out on Switch. It's apparently due out in 2018, sometime next year, but that's all they said. But just knowing that's in development is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think my favorite Fire Emblem games are actually Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn.
Oh yeah, I remember you being into those when we were working at Nintendo Power together.
Yeah, and those are just great games and also just sort of rare console entries in the series. So I'm really excited.
Well, for North America, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm excited that the Switch is going to get a game. We didn't get anything on the Wii U, and I always thought that the gamepad would have just been perfect for the gameplay of Fire Emblem. So
yeah, I suppose it would have, but nope, not getting one of those. But they are making the jump over to Switch. And yeah, I can't wait to find out more about that. And of course, I talked a little bit more about Fire Emblem Warriors, which personally I'm really excited about because I think that the mythos and the different character classes and the idea of having, you know, these different kinds of weapons that have priorities and things of that nature lends itself really well to the Warriors universe. So I'm very excited about that one. And they reconfirmed it's coming out in fall 2017, not only on Switch, but now it's coming out on the new 3DS systems as well. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I guess I'm not as excited just because I don't really like Hyrule Warriors. I like watching people play it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like watching people play it. I just don't really like playing it myself. And it just feels like, I don't know, I'm a big Zelda fan. And it always felt kind of shoehorned, taking all those characters and all of the great stuff from the Zelda universe and kind of forcing it in a way into this fighting style that is very specific to like Dynasty Warriors and stuff like that. So I could see why people like it, but I'm just not a big fan.
Well, I can see where you're coming from. I don't think it's necessarily the best fit for Zelda because, you know, Zelda isn't really all about, you know, army versus army battles, but it is for Fire Emblem. And so that's why I think it's a wonderful fit for that. I did enjoy Hyrule Warriors quite a bit. And the fact that it was a universe I really liked, like the Zelda universe, really, I think, brought out the fun of the Dynasty Warriors gameplay. And I expect the same thing is going to happen with Fire Emblem Warriors, where it'll be these characters in this universe that I already know combined with this action-oriented gameplay. And, you know, I think that's going to be a great marriage. Personally, though, I think I'm going to be more interested in the Switch version than the new 3DS version. I still don't have Hyrule Warriors Legends on 3DS yet, since it just looks so much better on Wii U. So,
right.
But still, it's pretty cool for handheld fans who might not be getting the Switch right away. And then on top of that, we had the other game you were alluding to earlier, Fire Emblem Heroes, which is the mobile game that Nintendo's been promising for a long time. And it's actually not that far off. It's coming out on Google Play on February 2nd. And I don't know if it's coming out the same day on iOS or not, because in the Direct, they said it was coming later to iOS. But then Nintendo sent out a tweet just a couple hours ago saying it was coming out on iOS the same day. So
yeah, I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be that it's coming out that day in Japan. But definitely, I noticed that in the presentation also, that they kind of hand-waved the release date for iOS.
Yeah, I guess we'll probably have that clarified soon enough. But yeah, that's not too far away. And I imagine even if it's not February 2nd, it probably won't be following too far later for people that have an Apple device. But yeah, now we kind of know what this game is all about. As I kind of expected, it's fairly traditional from a gameplay standpoint. It's your, you know, usual grid-based, turn-based strategy that Fire Emblem was known for. But as far as the story goes, it has the Emblian Kingdom versus the Askran Kingdom. And apparently these kingdoms are going to have characters both new and old. And it's up to you to build up your army using not only these new characters that go by the names of Alphonse, Sharina, Veronica. And apparently there's some dark mystery man who wears a mask. They won't tell us his name yet. He's just mystery man according to their website. But then there are going to be all kinds of classic characters you can enlist to help out. Marth, Anna, Tiki, Roy, Lynn, Lucina, Robin, Takumi, Tharja, Lon Ku, just to name a few. So all kinds of classic characters returning. It's got a fairly cute art style going on. And I guess it seemed like each map is just going to be a 16x8 grid. So a fairly confined space designed to work with mobile devices and give bite-sized amounts of play.
Yeah, you know, it looks interesting. I generally am not a big fan of playing games on my phone. So
could understand that.
Yeah. So when I heard they were talking about doing Fire Emblem next, I was kind of surprised. Like, I was kind of surprised that that was the next franchise after Mario that they're going to bring to phone. It seemed like a little bit, I mean, kind of an obvious choice, but also kind of a strange choice in terms of brand.
Yeah, as far as brand recognition, it is a little weird, but I thought, you know, it's not a game that requires a lot of, twitch and reflexes.
Right.
It's something that works really well with a touch interface. So for me, it kind of made sense in that regard.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly how I felt. But then when I saw it, it actually does look kind of fun.
Well, from a gameplay standpoint, certainly I think it should be a lot of fun, and it's going to have the usual weapon priorities triangle with the spears or the axes or the swords. But the thing that I'm kind of wondering about is bringing in these other characters, because one way you can enlist the aid of famous characters is by finding them in a hero battle where you defeat this character and then he or she will join you in battle. But I guess the main way to do it is using these orbs that you get. And you can either earn orbs by playing through the game and winning battles, I guess, or you can do in-app purchases to buy them. And they had this really quick shot of the in-game store.
Yeah, I noticed
and
that.
And they have a purchase $75 for 140 orbs.
I saw that.
Now, obviously, that's the high. You don't have to buy 140 for $75. But boy, it seems like they could just really go nuts with the in-app purchases for these things. And I guess when you spend them, it's random what character you get. So you could spend 5 orbs and not get the character, and then more orbs and more orbs. And it's like, hey, I really want to get, you know, Lucina or something. You could end up spending, you know, a whole bunch of orbs and thus a whole lot of real life money trying to get the character you want. Although apparently the more times you try, the cheaper the cost of orbs gets. But still, it could be kind of a scary proposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're used to a Fire Emblem game where you just pay for the game and then boom, I get the game. I get all the content in there.
Yeah, I think Nintendo, it seems like they're still kind of figuring out how to do in-app purchases or how to sell these games on phones. I mean, there's a bunch of people, you know, obviously lots of developers have already solved this problem in different ways, but Nintendo never does anything the way that other people do. They want to figure out their way to do it, and I feel like they kind of botched it a little bit with Super Mario Run, at least.
Yes, I've had this discussion with Scott quite a bit. Oh, okay. And I'm happy with the way they did it.
Yeah, actually, I was fine with it too, but I talked to a lot of people, like friends and family who aren't gamers, and they were really shocked when they get to the spot in the game in Super Mario Run where it's like, what, I have to pay $10?
A lot of people were expecting it to be totally free. You know, it seems like in this case, they haven't really confirmed, but they did say in the press announcement that it is going to be a free-to-play game with optional in-app purchases. But what does that really mean? Does that mean you're going to have to, you know, pay to recharge your energy? Do you have to, you know, pay to level up your characters because you need special items? They were sure to point out in the presentation that your characters are kind of weak. And even if you have a good, cool hero character, you know, they have different star rankings, so it might be only that you're ranked 2 or 3 stars, and they can go up to 5 stars, and you'll have to train them to get them to 5-star level so they're tough enough to take on the enemy. What's it going to take to do that? Are you going to have to buy really rare items with actual currency? We're not quite sure.
Well, we're going to find out soon.
Yes, we will. But to me, just on the surface, it kind of looks like they're going the opposite way of Super Mario Run, where Super Mario Run was like, okay, you just, you know, pay once and you get all the content the game has to offer. In this one, you're going to be paying for these orbs. You could be paying to recharge energy. You could be paying to get these rare items you need to level up your characters. And yeah, that's a bit different from what I'm used to from Nintendo. So, you know, I'll wait and see how the game pans out. And maybe it's going to be totally reasonable and I won't mind the way they've implemented it, but, you know, it certainly could pose some obstacles for Nintendo fans who are used to the traditional way that Nintendo does things.
Well, it kind of makes sense, especially for a brand like Fire Emblem, where if you're trying to bring in casual gamers and you can get them in with a free game and then maybe they spend a couple bucks here and there, you know, that's good. But then there's also going to be hardcore fans who want to have everything. I think this idea of being able to pay for stuff, but also being able to maybe possibly earn it by just playing a lot. I think that could be a good compromise for between like the hardcore fan and somebody who just maybe wants to play the game for a few hours. So
yeah, I guess we'll just have to see how it's all done, and hopefully it's done well. I mean, for me personally, I never mind paying for like a finite purchase. So like if they said, okay, here's Fire Emblem and you get, you know, a satisfying 6-chapter or 10-chapter game, and then if you want to buy more chapters and additional story, you know, you can pay money for that. If you want to get additional characters, you can pay for that. But paying for orbs that randomly give you stuff, and maybe you just have to keep on paying and paying to get the things you want, I don't know. If that's how it plays out, then I don't know. I'll just have to wait and see. And like you said, it won't be too long before we know. But I'm glad it looks good from a gameplay perspective, yeah. And I'm certainly looking forward to giving it a try.
The whole vibe of the game kind of reminds me of Theater Rhythm, Final Fantasy.
Oh, I can see that.
Where it's got, they've kind of taken these characters and made them a little bit cuter, but also...
Yep, chibi-fied a little bit.
Yeah, but also it's sort of a best of. Mm-hmm. Like, personally, I really enjoyed Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy way more.
Oh, me too.
Way more than I thought I would. So.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about it is that I was kind of expecting this to sort of be the story that they used for Fire Emblem Warriors, where they have an excuse for grabbing all the different characters from throughout the ages and throwing them all together. But what the heck? Why not? It might not even turn out that way, but there's certainly no problem having that same conceit in both a mobile turn-based strategy game and a Switch/3DS action hack and slash title. So
yeah. Also, I think those two games are aimed at really different audiences. Like,
oh yeah, I think that's fair to say. Of course, the other thing they announced about this Fire Emblem Heroes game is that they're holding an online vote where you get to choose your favorite characters, and they'll make special versions of these characters available in the game, if you spend your orbs, of course. So if you want to go and vote on that, you just head out to fire-emblem-heroes.com and go vote for your favorite character. Moving on from there, we've got a lot more to talk about when it comes to the Nintendo Switch. For example, when we started recording last week, it was right after the presentation, and we didn't really know what games are going to be in the launch lineup. And I guess we still don't totally know what's going to be in the launch lineup, but there are a lot of rumors, at least. Before, of course, we knew that there was going to be The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which I am totally looking forward to. And we also knew that 1-2 Switch was going to be there at launch. I have taken more time and seen more of what that game has to offer. Have you checked this one out, Andy?
Only in the video.
So did you see the Treehouse Direct where they were actually, you know, playing all the mini games?
I didn't watch that, but I did get a chance to talk to some people who had tried it, and it sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, what'd they say?
Well, just that the
HD Rumble,
that's right, is actually pretty cool and interesting. And when you try it, you know, no one's ever really done anything like that before.
Cool. I've been having high hopes for that.
Yeah, me too. I think there's some interesting applications for that type of technology.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
And of course, the game also has a virtual udder yanking, which I'm always a big fan of. Yeah. It's got udder yanking, the quick draw cowboy type game, samurai training with swords, what appears to be spell casting. So we're doing a Harry Potter flourish with the wand, it seemed. They didn't show that one demonstrated, but they seemed to have a, you know, quick little clip of that. Guitar playing, table tennis, this dance posing game, something that looks like phone answering, baseball, and the eating contest. That was an interesting one. Use the IR camera to look at your mouth and see how quickly you are opening and closing your mouth to do an eating contest. I don't know if I'm totally sold on this yet. I'll definitely have to give it a try, though, because it is weird and interesting, and that's one of the things I like about what I've seen out of Switch so far, is that Nintendo is certainly bringing their usual brand of wackiness.
Yeah, I mean, it feels kind of like a tech demo in a lot of ways, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, I probably won't play that game, honestly, but I'm excited for what they're going to do with the Rumble. Even if it's just little things here and there, I feel like it could really add a new dimension to gameplay. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep, I totally agree. And I'm not usually a big Rumble fan, but from what I've heard about this, it seems like it'd be really, really exciting. Back to the alleged launch lineup, though. Other games that are likely to be there are Just Dance 2017, which, honestly, I really couldn't care less about. An indie, I guess, sort of a strategy game of sorts called Has Been Heroes, and that one's only going to have a $20 price point. So, you know, that's something that we talked about on the show before is, you know, would they have multiple price points? And man, the price points are all over the board. We've got your $60 games like Zelda, $20 games like Has Been Heroes. Their other games are only $40. 1-2 Switch is only $50. So I'm really glad to see that they're having that diversity in there. And, you know, not everything is expected to be that full $60 price.
Sure.
So Super Bomberman R, that's another one that's rumored to be out there at launch. Yeah, it's good to see Bomberman returning, of course.
I'm surprised that I'm not excited about that, just because I still regularly play Bomberman 2 on the NES. It's such a fun multiplayer game.
Nice.
I don't know. I think I'd rather just play that.
Other ones that may be coming out at launch are Rayman Legends Definitive Edition, Skylanders Imaginators, I Am Setsuna, which is an indie-developed RPG from the folks at Square Enix, and then a game called Steep, which is a title from Ubisoft. It is a open world winter sports game that combines skiing, snowboarding, paragliding, and a wingsuit, and it came out on other consoles back in December.
Have you played it?
No, I have not. But those are the games that I have heard are all likely candidates to be available at launch alongside Zelda and 1-2 Switch.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it feels like a bit of a wasteland there of launch titles. But, it's happened before with Nintendo systems where there's just not really anything at launch. And then a year later, it's amazing. So,
yeah. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you there. Out of all those titles, I don't think I'm going to get anything except for Zelda. And I'm taking a wait and see approach on 1-2 Switch. I'll play it at a friend's house, and if it blows me away and I decide to start having Switch parties every week, then it'll be a must own. But for now, of those titles, probably just Zelda. But as I said last week, I'll probably be playing that one for 6 months before I'm done with it. So,
have you heard about any differences between the Wii U version and the Switch version?
Not really. I'm under the impression that the Switch version might have a better frame rate. And I've been seeing some rumors online where they were saying, oh no, the Wii U version has a better frame rate. But from what I've gathered, that's not true. Other than that, and a few minor graphical differences, I think they're going to be pretty much the same game.
Unless there's something that's like groundbreaking, I'll probably just play it on the Wii U. I think the Wii U is an underrated system.
I agree.
There's so many great games.
And you would think that the second screen, you know, would add something of the experience.
Yeah, I'm excited to play it on the Wii U. It feels like the right swan song for a great console. Mm. So
yeah, I understand what you're saying. I might also have said I was content to just get the Wii U version, but I've been begging for a Zelda Special Edition for probably half a decade, so I had to take the plunge on that bad boy, and I'll be playing that Master Edition.
Well, I'm jealous.
Assuming I can afford it.
That said, I'm really excited for what is down the road with the Switch. There's some cool stuff coming out this year, it sounds like, even.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff, including a bunch of things we didn't get to talk about last week because they weren't shown on that initial presentation. And one of those games is Snipper Clips, which is a Nintendo title coming out what appears to be not at launch, but later on in March. Did you check this one out?
I did not.
Well, it is a crazy, wacky-looking puzzle game where you've got these uniquely shaped cartoon characters, and you can twist them and turn them and make them overlap and then cut each other into different shapes. So you can make your character into like a skinny needle or maybe into a scoop. And then you use these differently shaped forms to solve puzzles. You know, at first you're just like, you know, positioning your characters into various shapes. Like, you know, you rotate them both and then they fit into a heart shape. But then later on, you're like, you know, hauling down balloons and popping them, or, you know, shoving a pencil into a pencil sharpener and all kinds of weird stuff. So it's very bizarre. And I love the fact that Nintendo was pushing this on their Treehouse live stream, because it's like one of these crazy, quirky games that, you know, you would never really see most first parties pushing. And it's not up for pre-order on any site, which kind of leads me to believe it's going to be a download-only title, and it makes me wonder if it's only going to have like a, you know, $15, $20 price point.
Who's the developer?
I'm not sure who's developing it, but, you know, it's published by Nintendo.
It kind of reminds me of like something similar to like Pushmo or Crashmo in terms of the way that they're pushing it, but also maybe the way they're going to deliver it too. That sounds interesting. Kind of like a combination between something like that and like Tearaway or something.
I haven't played that one, but this one is certainly full of Nintendo oddness and quirkiness and charm. So it's one to keep an eye on. Then we found out that Sonic Mania is coming out on the Switch, and I am super excited for that one. That, of course, is the old school 2D Sonic the Hedgehog game that just looks absolutely bananas. And you know, it's made by hardcore old school Sega fans who just bring out the best of classic Sonic and bring it out on modern console. Man, it looks really cool. I'm really happy to see it coming out on Switch, because before, when it was coming out on competing systems, but when they first announced it, they didn't say anything about Switch. And it was like at the same announcement, they're like, oh, but the next generation Sonic game is coming out on Switch. So I'm like, oh man, I guess there's no chance of coming out on Nintendo, because, you know, if they're talking about Sonic Project, you know, 2017 coming out on Switch, why wouldn't they say it about Sonic Mania? But ha, they fooled me. Pulled the wool over my eyes. It is coming out, and it's supposed to be out this spring. And I'm really looking forward to that one. Also from Sega is Puyo Puyo Tetris, which is a puzzle game combining Tetris and Puyo Puyo, as the title implies. There's going to be a Blaze Blue game, the long-running fighting series that Axis publishes over here. I don't think they've confirmed it's coming out in North America yet, but that's still cool to know about. Wonder Boy, The Dragon's Trap is on the way, which is a remake of the old Master System game, speaking of Sega. A new version of Binding of Isaac is coming out. Redout, which is being published by Nicholas and developed by a company called 34 Big Things, is a really crazy looking racing game. It looks like Star Wars Episode One Racer. If you look at the trailer, it's got, you know, these big engines up in front, totally giving off this Episode One vibe. But then it looks like that combined with F-Zero, so that looks, you know, really gnarly. There's another futuristic racing game coming out called Fast RMX, which sounds pretty neat. They've made previous games on Nintendo platforms before in the Fast series, so I imagine this one is going to be just as good, if not better. Disgaea 5 Complete is coming out from NIS. And then there's something called Arcade Archives. I don't know exactly what that is, but there has been an Arcade Archives series on PlayStation 4, and that's had, you know, several releases, each one with a different arcade game. It includes stuff like Double Dragon and Contra and Gradius and lots of all-time arcade greats. That, of course, is a downloadable series. Each one of those costs like $8 or something, but I will certainly welcome that on the Nintendo Switch. I'm sure there are a few other games that I've neglected to mention, but yeah, I just wanted to throw all those out there since we weren't able to include them all last week. And, you know, Sonic Mania is certainly the one I'm most excited about, but it's pretty cool to see that all those are going to be coming to the Switch in the not-too-distant future. Oh, another thing that came up last week and we weren't able to talk about was the new Legend of Zelda merchandise. As part of the Switch reveal, Nintendo announced that there were going to be a couple additional Breath of the Wild amiibo.
Amiibo!
We already knew about Link with the Bow, Link on the Horse, and the Guardian, but it turns out there is also going to be an amiibo of Zelda herself and an enemy Bokoblin. Andy, are you a amiibo fan? Are you an amiibo collector?
Yes, not quite as much as you are, but I do collect some amiibo.
Cool.
And the Zelda ones have all been great. And the Breath of the Wild amiibos, mm-hmm. even the ones they had already announced, look like the best ones that they, in terms of just quality and the level of detail.
Yeah, they're looking pretty neat.
So I'm excited for all of those.
Yeah, me too. Especially the Zelda one. That one looks to be a really great character design. And just looking at the amiibo, looking at her in the trailer, I think it has potential to be one of my favorite iterations of that character. And then something a little bit pricier than an amiibo. The folks over at First Four Figures have announced a new Zelda collectible. They're making a life-size replica of Majora's Mask.
Oh my.
Andy, I know you are a huge fan of Majora's Mask. What would you pay for a life-size replica of that infamous item?
Is it something that you can wear or something that is supposed to go on a shelf and not ever be touched?
Well, it's designed, I think, to go on a shelf. It comes with a little stand that kind of looks like a tree. I don't know if you can actually wear it, but I'll just come out and say it. The price on this sucker is $385.
That is a little bit steep.
It is. It is. It's still pretty darn cool looking, but I will not be adding it to my collection. But still, if you are a Zelda fan and have some money to burn, now you know what you can look forward to.
I will admit, I did buy two of the Majora's Mask 3DS Special Editions with the Skull Kid figurine.
Oh, nice.
One to open and one to not open. So I think that's the only time I've ever done that.
Well, I got one, and I've got Skull Kid on display, but that's pretty hardcore.
On some days of the week, Majora's Mask is my favorite Zelda game.
Oh, there's a lot to like about that game.
I alternate.
Fair enough. This seems like a good place for us to take an intermission, so let's do that. And then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is how Nintendo can make Switch a success. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is what else Nintendo could do to make the Nintendo Switch a success. They seem to have unloaded their arsenal as of last week. We know what the price is, which is $300. We know what the release date is, which is March 3rd. And we know a lot of the titles that are in the works, even if we are still trying to figure out exactly what's going to be in the launch lineup, as we discussed earlier in this episode. I, of course, am already on board. I've already pre-ordered, but opinions online seem very divided. And Andy, I know you're not quite sold yet, so you're a good person to have for this discussion. What's it going to take to make you go all in on Switch?
Splatoon 2. As soon as Splatoon 2 comes out, it's must buy. Splatoon was possibly my favorite game last year. Did it come out last year? Whenever it came
out. No, it was 2015.
Well, it was my favorite game of that year, possibly. And it was so great to see Nintendo dive headfirst into a new IP and really bring it to life and really give it that level of polish and also make an online game that really pushed the boundaries of how far they'd ever gone with online play before.
Yeah.
I just think it's a great game. I think the world is great. I think even the single player stuff was really great, but of course it's an online first game and just a sequel. Splatoon 2 is all I needed to know.
Well, that's a perfect segue into what I would say is the first thing that Nintendo has to do to help make the system a success, and that is to have a combination of original IPs and fan favorite IPs. And that's something that I think they have been doing pretty well from what we've seen so far, because we've got Zelda and we've got Mario on the way and we've got Fire Emblem on the way and Xenoblade and Splatoon as well. And Splatoon is an especially unique point because it's not a long-running franchise. It is a pretty new franchise, and it was one that really made a huge splash, no pun intended, on the Wii U because it was something new and innovative and unique and brought something new to the genre. And that's something that, you know, I really want to see them continue with this. And again, we are kind of seeing that so far with 1-2 Switch and Snipper Clips and ARMS. In fact, ARMS, to me, seems to have awful lot of the Splatoon DNA in it. It feels very similar in a lot of ways in that it's an online battling game, it's arena-based, it's colorful and quirky and cartoony, and it's a different take on, I guess, in Splatoon's case it was shooters, in this case, I guess you could say it's fighting games or boxing games. But I really like that kind of idea, and I think just, you know, having more of that could only be a good thing. What did you think of ARMS, by the way?
You know, I only saw the trailer in the first presentation, and maybe I watched a little bit more online. But I don't know. The jury's out for me. Like, sometimes those motion games where you end up having to make, like, a lot of motion to make it work, like a lot of physical arm motion, just aren't very fun to me. But I'll reserve judgment until I get a chance to try it. It looks cool.
Well, you should definitely check out what they showed on the Treehouse Live portion of the presentation, because it looked a lot better there than it did just in the initial presentation. You got to see more of the characters. You got to see more of the different weapons that you could use, because you can, you know, change up the fists that your characters are equipped with, and just learn more about the technique involved. And to me, it kind of really does feel like, you know, an evolution of that Splatoon DNA and could have a lot of potential there. As you said, the jury's still out. We'll have to see if it all seems good. And plus, you know, they've only shown 5 characters so far, but I'm expecting there to be significantly more than that. So once we know everything about the game, once it's all fleshed out, and once we've had more time to go arms on with it, then I guess we'll know for sure. But, you know, I sort of do like the direction it's heading. To continue along this discussion path, I think bringing back, you know, more beloved franchises in addition to innovative new stuff like that is key. So, you know, once we get like our Animal Crossings and our Metroids and our Pokemons and our Smash Brothers, then I think that, you know, a lot more people will be able to be like, oh yeah, well now my favorite is on there, so now I'm on board. Along with having new stuff that pulls in people that hadn't really been fans before and, you know, bring in a new audience. So I think all that stuff is key. So they're off to a good start, I think, with that. Just got to keep doing more of that.
Yeah, I think so too. It's always good software that's going to sell a video game system. I also think, though, it's worth pointing out that I think that Nintendo is doing a much better job this time around of explaining to the public what this system is all about. I mean, much better job than they did with the Wii U of just sort of explaining what the system is and why it's different from what else is out there. I feel like they've been doing a better job of that this time around, from everything from the name.
In a sense, yeah.
Yeah, and like the name to the way that they've sort of rolled out information, I think has been better. Not perfect, but better.
Well, they've certainly made it clear that it's a new system. They've certainly made it clear that it is a system that you can have as both a console and a handheld. And you know, I think they've done a really good job with that. I do think that, you know, maybe so far it's overshadowing some of the other cool features. And you know, I think I've heard from some people and they're kind of baffled, like, you know, why does this have, you know, an IR sensor? Why does this have motion control? And the answer is because you want this thing to be able to have all kinds of flexibility. So I kind of feel like that's another thing Nintendo needs to do, is to prove the value of these other features, prove the value of the controller, prove why they've got these detachable Joy-Cons other than just so it can be a portable and a handheld. But, you know, show that, you know, there's really cool stuff in the way that motion has evolved, really cool stuff with this HD rumble, and just prove that there is value there and there's lots of neat stuff and there's a reason why these controllers cost as much as they do, because they're going to give you really fun and unique and innovative ways to play games. Now, I don't want the gimmicks to be like, you know, overpowering the regular gameplay, and I kind of think that in most cases it's best to make these gimmicky controls an option. Like, I've heard that the character movement in ARMS, you can either control it by moving the Joy-Cons or just, you know, through traditional controls. And I think that is great. So, you know, I think that's another thing Nintendo needs to do, is, you know, show how cool all these controls are, but also make it optional. So most of their games appeal to both traditional players and players that want this new kind of stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree.
The next thing I would say they need to do is to keep last-gen ports to a minimum. And that's another one that, you know, I feel like so far, so good. We're getting Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And when we talked about this one last week, I was kind of surprised they didn't really get much of a spot in their presentation. But then after finding out more about it and finding out that the emphasis is really on battle mode with lots of cool battle mode stuff and a handful of new characters, but not really having any new cups or single player tracks, I'm like, okay, well, I can see why they might not push it that hard, since it is just an enhancement of last gen game. But I'm glad they're not, you know, going crazy with that stuff, because I know a lot of people are expecting it. You know, with Splatoon for a long time, we thought it was just going to be an upgrade to the original Splatoon. And I've heard a lot of other speculation that, you know, other titles could be coming over from Wii U. But so far, that's not what we've seen. That's not really the Nintendo way, usually. They don't really tend to rely on that stuff. And I'm glad that that seems to be the case so far. Now, if they do decide to port Smash Brothers over, I'll be totally fine with that. That's what I'll be down with. But I'm fairly glad that, you know, we're getting a new Xenoblade and not just a port of Xenoblade Chronicles X. And there's no announcement for a port of Mario Maker. So, you know, I think that, again, this is something that they seem to be on the right path. I hope they continue this path when it comes to being sort of frugal with the last-gen ports.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it seems like it would be tempting to do that, just because there's a lot of Wii U games that would probably, I don't know for sure, but it seems like they would translate pretty well to the Switch. And the Wii U didn't sell as well as they were hoping, so you could you could see them making an argument for putting resources towards bringing that stuff over to Switch. But obviously, we'd rather see new stuff.
Now, if they want to dip, you know, further back into the catalog and, you know, maybe enhance some GameCube games or Wii games, you know, bring over, you know, an HD version of Luigi's Mansion or Mario Sunshine, I'd be fine with that. Of course, I'd rather have a, you know, Luigi's Mansion 3 or something too. So if that's an option, that is always would be my preferred way to go. On to the next item on the list. Nintendo has got to work those third-party connections and get those key third-party games.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, you know, they've never really been very good at, or at least in the last few consoles.
Like 20 years, yeah. It's been a long time.
But maybe the Switch will change that, you know? It's let's be honest, it probably won't. But you know, we're seeing, they announced Skyrim, right?
Yeah, they announced Skyrim, and they announced FIFA, and they announced NBA 2K17. And those are some key mainstream, mass appeal, third-party titles that I think are really important to have. But I feel like it's just a start. Unless your system has Call of Duty and Madden and Assassin's Creed, then I feel like, you know, you're still not having those really important titles that, you know, systems should have. I mean, for me, personally, it's all about the, you know, Japanese stuff, and they already have a lot of those developers on board. But like with Square Enix, you know, I really hope they're trying to negotiate to get not just Dragon Quest, but to get a mainline Final Fantasy game. And, you know, even better, I really hope they're able to get like Kingdom Hearts 3. That would be amazing. That would rock. I have no doubt that, you know, some of the other franchises that, you know, maybe aren't the most important things in America are going to be on the way. Like, I'm positive we're going to get a new Monster Hunter. But still, I hope they're working with those North American third parties to bring us more of that stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, like, I think since the last generation of consoles, the landscape has really changed with third-party games.
Oh, yeah?
I think so. I mean, you still have some of the same stuff that you had before, but you also have all the indie games that have come out in the last 5 years. Like, some of my favorite games that I've played in the last 5 years have been games that were developed by one or two or three people.
Mm-hmm.
And Nintendo definitely seemed, at least towards the last half of the Wii U, that they were trying to make their platform a place where indie developers could get their games to.
Yeah, I think they are.
And I think that some of the decisions that it sounded like they're making with the Switch, like no region locking and things like that, I think it, you know, it seems like those types of things could go a long way. And if they can make it worthwhile for a small developer to bring their game over to their store, then I think that they'll get, you know, a lot in the way of that type of third-party support.
Yeah, you make a very good point.
In some ways, to me, that's almost more enticing. Just because every year there's like a game or two that just comes out of left field that is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited to see, you know, what happens in the next couple years in that scene. So
yeah, I think so far they're actually doing a pretty good job on that front. We're getting stuff like Shovel Knight, I Am Setsuna.
Yeah, I saw that.
Fast RMX, Redout, Binding of Isaac, Wonder Boy, and, you know, all those fall into this indie category. And knowing that those are on the way is already pretty cool. So yeah, hopefully the door is wide open. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, the indie community is definitely something that should not be left out. I just hope that they can get everybody dev kits who wants it in the near future, because yeah, that is pretty key.
Yeah, speaking of Shovel Knight, isn't it Shovel Knight Treasure Trove? Isn't that what Yacht Club announced?
Yeah.
And do we know what that is yet?
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last week. Oh, okay. It's basically just a new name for the Shovel Knight package, because originally, you know, there was no name for the main Shovel Knight campaign. It was just called Shovel Knight, and then you could switch the other campaigns. Now, I think Shovel Knight Treasure Trove is what they're calling it when you buy, you know, like the whole package, and you get all the existing campaigns and modes. But now you'll also be able to buy them separately if you just want Shovel Knight's campaign or Plague Knight's campaign. Right. Or a different campaign.
Spectre Knight is the new one.
Yes. Yeah, so I think it's mostly just a new name for the way things are being packaged more than anything else.
Well, I have to say, the original Shovel Knight and then Plague of Shadows, both great games in their own right.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm really excited for Spectre of Torment. And if it comes out on the Switch and there's even like a tiny bit more content, I would probably buy it and play it all over again. So,
yeah, there's a very good chance I will buy that game for a third time after already getting it on a 3DS and Wii U.
Do you have the Amiibo?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can do a co-op. But apparently the co-op will be included in the Switch version. No Amiibo necessary. The next thing I would say that Nintendo's got to do is to really prove the value of online. As we mentioned last week, it's sort of a big shift for Nintendo that they're going to be switching to a paid online model. And I think for a lot of customers, it's going to be a bit of a bitter pill to swallow that once the fall rolls around, they won't just get free online gameplay. So I think it's really key that in the time between now and then, they prove there is a reason to pay for the service. And hopefully it's not just, oh, well, this is the only way you can play Splatoon online. Hopefully there is something there. You know, just getting one NES or Super NES game that you get to, like, borrow for a month with some online-enabled feature doesn't really sound on paper to be that amazing. So hopefully there's more to it than that. But, you know, I would love for them to come through over the next several months and be like, oh, yeah, look at all this this cool online stuff you get if you pay for our online services.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, especially when you think about Splatoon 2 or Mario Maker, if they ever do something like that again. But, you know, Splatoon was obviously it was free. And,
but it did have some issues.
Oh, yeah. But it also was, you know, it was one of those games that the meat of the game is playing online. So if they do that again with Splatoon 2, but you have to also pay for a service, that could be interesting. It makes me wonder if they'll try to add more value to the single player campaign for Splatoon 2 so that people who, you know, don't have the servers or can't afford it would still get value out of paying $60 for a game.
Maybe. I was thinking more on the lines of, you know, they just need to step it up with like their matchmaking service and make that easier so, you know, it's more convenient to team up with friends and form an alliance with your fellow players that you want to team up with, because I've heard people having trouble with that in the previous one. And I know they have this new app coming out, so, you know, maybe that will solve all the problems, but, you know, we have to see and make sure that, you know, all this stuff is really good if they're going to want people to pay for it.
Yeah. I was also sort of intrigued by, in the presentation, they made a quick mention of being able to connect locally up to 8 switches or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it seems like, you know, something, at first it seems like, oh, well, you know, that most people probably won't use that. They'll just play online.
Probably.
But, I mean, it, you know, if it's a portable system, and I can see people actually putting that to use, and I wonder where that fits in to the whole online story.
I see it being, like, huge for, like, esports and stuff. I think that's where that's really going to shine. But anyway, speaking of online, I think another important key is to have improved virtual console. I don't want it to just be the same old games that we've had with the Wii and the Wii U. Hopefully Nintendo's out there renegotiating contracts, bringing back the games that people really want but we haven't been able to get over the last 10 years. For heck's sake, finally get us Contra. We need Contra on virtual console.
Yeah, I ended up getting a NES Classic for Christmas, and
oh, nice.
I was really surprised that Super C was on there, but no Contra.
Yeah, it's really weird. Whatever the case is, Nintendo needs to go out and fix that, because Contra is an awesome game that everyone should be playing, and they shouldn't just have to pull out their copy of Contra 4 and unlock it as a bonus. It should be there on Virtual Console and on NES Classic Volume 2 or whatever. So, but that's just the start. There's probably lots of other games that aren't out there that should be out there. You know, bring back the Genesis games and the TurboGrafx games, the Neo Geo games that were all on Wii but weren't directly on Wii U. Give us GameCube games. And since this thing is also portable, you know, you can also put on Game Boy and Game Boy Color and Game Gear, which of course were on 3DS but weren't on Wii or Wii U. And of course, give us GBA and DS as well. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement there. I think a lot of the stuff they did with the NES Classic, you know, I think they could learn from and do some of that stuff with the virtual console offerings. But for me, that would be a key way to help make Switch a success.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so much potential there, more so than they've ever had, because, I mean, this is a portable system. So,
yep.
I mean, you know, having access to all of those old games on a system that's portable. I mean, I know there's some of that on the 3DS, but I could see that being actually a huge selling point for the system, saying that you can play all these old NES or Super Nintendo games on a portable system is pretty cool.
For sure. And speaking of online features of that nature, I think Nintendo also needs to get online services in gear, stuff like Netflix, because apparently they aren't going to have Netflix at launch or any other video services. And on the one hand, it kind of seems, well, maybe it's not that necessary, because like everything in my house runs Netflix and my toaster runs Netflix. So do I really need it on my Nintendo system? And I think the answer is yes, you do, because it just kind of seems like it's not a fully formed piece of hardware if it can't do that stuff. So if it's really not there at launch, I hope Nintendo is putting things in place to ensure that it does come soon enough, because it just seems like something that a modern system should have.
You know, I'm gonna play devil's advocate and disagree with you there.
Oh, yeah?
You know, I think back to the Wii U and the whole Nintendo TV or whatever it was called. That was just
well, that was terrible.
It was just a total failure. And it feels like Nintendo is always, you know, when they're trying to do that stuff, just behind the competition, and they want to get into that space. They wanted to do it with the Wii U. They had ideas, but it just, I don't know. I guess for me, like, I would rather them stay focused on making it a great gaming console and not worry about Netflix. I've got Netflix on my phone, and you know, everyone, seems like everyone these days has it somewhere.
Right.
Like you said, maybe not the toaster, but you know, like on your,
I think my I'm pretty sure my toaster does.
Does it? Oh, well, wow. It's a fancy toaster. but I don't know. I guess to me, it just feels like Nintendo's a gaming company, and we have enough devices and gaming systems that can do that kind of thing. And I would rather them just stay focused on making the Switch like the greatest gaming system ever.
Well, I certainly see where you're coming from, and I agree part way. I do think that Nintendo should focus on the games because that's what they do best. But hopefully, you know, they'll get, you know, interested parties like Netflix or Crunchyroll or whatever to want to put their apps and services on this system to give people one less reason to turn off their Switch and turn on their Xbox, their PlayStation, or their other set-top box. Because if you can keep people, you know, playing the Switch, I think that is only to Nintendo's benefit.
Yeah, I mean,
but yeah, as far as Nintendo themselves is concerned, yeah, they should probably not try anything like they did with the Wii U TV. That didn't go so well.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it doesn't happen eventually. Maybe not at launch, but if they don't open up their store to be able to have stuff that is more like what we would consider to be apps on there. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think you're right. I think it'll be coming eventually. Hopefully they're encouraging it though. So I guess after that, just my last key to making Switch a success would be, you know, if they need to, I hope that they are considering possibly a price cut down the road. Because, you know, $300, it's a challenging price point, because you can get a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One for $300 or less. And you could be like, okay, well, those are older systems, so you'd expect them to cost less. But also, they're more advanced technology in a lot of ways. So when you compare those and you go to the store and, you know, say you're a parent saying, hey, which system should I get? You know, I could see someone being like, hey, well, you should buy this PlayStation 4 because it's only $290 and comes with a 500 gig hard drive. And look, the games look even better. So if the system, you know, is sort of off to a slow start, if it ends up a little bit like 3DS, kind of stumbling out the door, then I hope that they could consider, you know, cutting back the price a little bit. They didn't do that with Wii U, and we, you know, saw what happened there. So I just hope that it's something that they will consider if need be, you know, along with, you know, offering incentives to the early adopters, the ambassadors, like they did for 3DS. Because, you know, we saw what happened with that system. It started off kind of slow, but, you know, in the end, you know, they've sold, you know, millions and millions of units. So I just kind of hope that somewhere in the back of their minds, they've sort of got this as sort of a plan C or a plan D if they need to you know, help ensure that the Switch is a big hit.
Yeah, I mean, paying less money is always a good thing. I alluded to it before, but I really think that if they can sell this idea of the portable system that is also a console, like I think that will be appealing to people in a way where $300 seems like a reasonable price.
I hope so.
But who knows, you know, only time will tell. It's definitely going to be interesting. I honestly haven't been this excited for a Nintendo console in a really long time. It feels like everything that I wanted the Wii U to be. To me, it seems easily worth $300. You always kind of expect with Nintendo, too, that there's like a little bit of a premium put on their products.
Yeah, they don't like to sell at a loss, that's for sure.
Yeah, but you feel like you're getting your money's worth. Nintendo just knows how to create fun. They're so good at it.
Yeah, Nintendo has its own special brand of magic and its own special unique innovation that is really hard for the competition to touch.
Yeah, and they've been doing it for so long. And I always feel like, you know, there's like a $50 premium that you have to pay to get that fun. And I'm willing to pay it.
Says the man who hasn't actually pre-ordered it.
Yeah. Well, I may get one at launch. We'll see.
Well, if not, I guess I will see you in those summer battles on Splatoon 2 then.
Most definitely.
Well, I think that covers this week's big topic, so I guess we should wrap up this episode of the show. But before we go, you know what we've got time for?
What's that?
A dramatic reading. This time, from the manual of another one of the games included in the NES Classic, Ice Climber. It's only you and an ice hammer as you make your way to the top of the mountain. If you can break through 8 levels of treacherous Arctic ice, you'll reach the top of the mountain. But watch out. The nitpicker. Condors and polar bears don't want you up there, and they've got a bag of tricks that will block your rise to the top. There are 32 challenging peaks to scale. Face them alone or with a friend.
Ominous.
It is. Scary. There's a nitpicker. I didn't know there was a nitpicker in that game. If I knew there was a nitpicker, I would have been way more terrified. I actually have no idea what the nitpicker is.
I don't either.
But it sounds scary. Anyway, that does it for this week's episode. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Andy at Stenobot. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be swell if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Andy, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. I'm always down to talk video games.
Glad to hear it. For myself, Andy Myers.
Lally-ho!
And our little buddy, I the Monkey.
Yay, yay!
We will see you next time.